Douglas, first of all, from you, I want to get your predictions on what you think the new year of 2005 will hold for us in this field that you are such an expert in.
Well, thank you for the compliment. I don't consider myself an expert. Every day is a learning experience, but I got to say this. Just based on research that that we have done as a team, the Northeast Intelligence Network, in conjunction with Steve Quayle, too, we agree with Yusuf Bedansky's assessment, which he recently made a few statements.
Tell us who he is.
Okay, Yusuf Bedansky is a he was the former director of the U.S. Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. He held that position during the Clinton administration. Just a tremendously knowledgeable individual, and a terrorism expert, by the way. But Mr. Bedansky had recently stated that right now, across the globe, there are anywhere between 500,000 to 1 million people, radical Islamic fundamentalists, that are ready to die for their cause. Now, another 10 million are willing to actively support them, and another 50 million would provide financial support. Now, he does go on to say he makes some pretty dire predictions in terms of the use of unconventional weapons, including nuclear, chemical, and biological, of course. But he had stated this, and this I can see this shaping up for 2005. And as we've always said collectively, there's a greater war here. What we're seeing are a bunch of smaller battles. 9/11 was a battle. People ask me all the time, why haven't we seen any attacks since September 11th? Well,
right.
Essentially, the reason, and I agree with Mr. Bedansky about this, the first one sufficiently sent a clear message to the Islamic world that the United States could be penetrated. Now, any secondary attack would really have to be larger and would have to eclipse the first attack. And the first attack, if you even go back to the earlier attacks in the early 90s, from the first World Trade Center forward, those took 4, 5, 6 years in the planning stages. So I think right now we are probably on the cusp or in the wake, or the plans have been made. I think 2005 is going to be a critical year. I think that our foreign policy, with respect to what we have done in terms of Afghanistan and Iraq, I think that has alienated most of the Muslim population against the United States. Do I feel that that is a correct? Do I think that's right? No, I don't. But on the other hand, you cannot think like a Westerner.
But remember now, our intervention into Afghanistan did not occur until after 9/11.
Exactly.
Same with this, third basically incursion into Iraq after Desert Storm, and then the second one under Clinton. In this particular case, we were the ones who were attacked first.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with that. Now, of course, that's the Western thought process. Now, on the other hand, from what we see stated on the Islamic message boards, and what we see in terms of synopsis from the Friday sermons at the mosques in Riyadh and in Saudi Arabia and in other countries, what we see is a festering of hatred because of our foreign policy. Do I think that's correct? No, absolutely not. I think we had every right to retaliate for what happened on 9/11 and the previous events. On the other hand, that's my Western thought process. To win the war, and why we're not losing the war, or why we're losing the war, in my estimation, right now on terrorism, is because we're stuck in this Western thought process. In order to fight our enemy, we have to think like the enemy.
Well, let's find out from you, Stephen. Are we, and I want to get your predictions for 2005, are we losing the war on terrorism? To me, it looks like we may be winning.
Well, first of all, again, I think that if you're looking at the battles that we see portrayed on the television news, you know, that's open to what's accurate versus what is not accurate. I think it's telling that General Abizaid, the guy that's basically in charge of the whole war now in Iraq, has made the statement. He, and this is his exact words, he can't understand why Iran is sending more troops and rattling the saber. George, prior to Iraq's, us even going in against Iraq for the reasons that were stated and the reasons behind the scenes, I was making the statement, as you know on your show, that we were talking about Iran being the power broker. You're talking about the Persian Empire. You're talking about a major contender for weapons of mass destruction. So today I thought it was very telling that, again, the general of Allied forces, of all forces pretty much in Iraq, is making the statement, and I thought it was kind of an unusual statement for that general to make the statement that he made in saying that, don't you Iranians understand that, and I'm paraphrasing now, don't you Iranians understand the firepower and the air superiority we have? And the Iranians, I think, are saying, don't you understand who our benefactors are? In other words, we've got a situation now brewing where, if Shakespeare said all the world's a stage, he should have really said it's a chessboard. And the point being is now you've got Russia and China having made their deals with Iran, with not only defense treaties but with economic ties. You've got the situation that Vladimir Putin, who, by the way, in my opinion, has moved as a genius on the stage of the world, again, recognizing your enemy and understanding them is an important part to, let's say, being able to see the catalyst that's involved. We're being checkmated. We've got Venezuela. The whole oil issue, and I want to bring this up, the whole oil issue was predictable, and the fact that you haven't seen it yet and most of America hasn't seen it yet, when Greenspan makes a statement prior to the election, everything's hunky-dory, and then a couple weeks after the election, he's saying, well, interest rates are going to have to rise, things are going to get tough, we've got to raise our interest rates to get the capital into the United States, we need $2 billion a day from foreign investors, and when you've got some of the biggest takers in the history of buying our treasury debt who are no longer buying our treasury debt, that's something people have got to understand. There is this whole perception that the United States is basically a pariah nation, and there are factions getting together. If you take Russia, China, and India alone, you can come up with close to 3 billion people that have said, we're going to vie for the New World Order. And I think that's something that when we went to the break that you were saying in the background, there's still a bigger plan here. There's a bigger dialectic moving, and that's what I think we've got to identify. So I think if people focus strictly on Iraq or strictly on Afghanistan and overlook what's obvious in this country, if you've got 4 to 6 million people on adjustable rate mortgages and they qualified under the scantus of financial strength, when the interest rates rise proportionately to a panic market, you've got a lot of people that are basically going to have to either get raises equal to the situation at hand of rising interest rates, or they're going to lose their home.